Okay, hello year 11s and early entry year 10s. What we're going to do is, much like how we did with paper one a couple of months ago, there's a couple of the English teachers who have just been given an unseen practice. So we have not looked at this before. The only thing I know about it is the title. And we're just going to talk through how we would answer the question and how what we think about these sources. So I'm going to have these emailed out to you. You can probably find the resources on Frog as well. But the title of this paper two is Rail Disasters. And I think it's always really important that you, the first thing you do is really identify with the subject matter and make sure then you know roughly what you're looking for. Okay, so Miss, you've got this paper. What's the first thing that you're going to do?
Well, I think what we've always been telling the kids is to actually look at the questions first.
Yeah.
So then you're not actually, you know, reading with nothing. So we look at the questions. It says read lines 4 to 11. So before I did anything, I would just draw a line where line 11 is between lines 4 and 11. So I'm reading the right section.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go around that with my highlighter.
Which source?
Source A.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mr. Shirley's just here purely to irritate us. Okay. So do we want to do question 1 and read up to line 11?
Sounds like fun.
Okay, so Mr. Shirley,
yeah,
will you read out the 8 statements, or
yes.
Do you want to read through the source?
I'll do both.
Okay, go on then.
Okay, so the statements: 2 carriages did not go over into the stream. There were 2 ladies in the carriage with Dickens. The young lady screamed. The old lady said, "My God!" 2 old ladies were in the carriage with Dickens. Only 1 carriage did not go.
Do you need a moment, Mr. Shirley?
Over the stream, the old lady screamed, the young one said, "My God."
Dickens told the lady to be quiet and calm down. Okay. Okay, now reading.
You're not doing any more reading.
No, I'm just going to read it.
Okay, go on then.
Lines 4. Okay, so.
No, you can start from the beginning.
No, but it wastes time because we want to get right to the question
okay.
and save time, right?
Okay.
Don't ever read anything that isn't to answer a question.
That's not a rule.
It's my rule. So I'm going to skip right to the second paragraph. I was in the only carriage that did not go over into the stream. Ooh, right away.
So.
Only 1 carriage did not go into the stream.
Just
that
do it and do a little mark next to my sign. Yeah.
And the first one's not true. It was caught. It was caught upon the turn by some of the ruin of the bridge and hung suspended at balance in an apparently impossible manner. 2 ladies were my fellow passengers. An old one, a young one. This is exactly what passed. You may judge from it the precise length of the suspense. Suddenly, we were off the rail and beating the ground as a car of a half-emptied balloon might. The old lady cried out, "My God!" And the young one screamed. I caught hold of them both. The old lady sat opposite and the young one on my left and said, "We can't help ourselves, but we can be quiet and composed. Pray, don't cry out." They both answered quite collectedly, "Yes." And I got out without the least notion of what had happened.
Questions are ridiculous. So I don't think, honestly, in the real paper, you're going to have exact opposites like this. So
yeah.
If you're looking at the statements.
There's ones that are obviously true and the ones that are the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Like 2 carriages did not go over and only 1 carriage did not go over.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen.
Basically, well done, Miss Meeks, for finding a dreadful past paper.
No.
And some of them might be like direct from the text, like only 1 carriage did not go over. The young lady screamed, the old lady said, "My God." But then some of them you might have to infer. So inference, what does that mean?
You had to infer the last one.
Yeah.
Dickens told the ladies to be quiet and calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I...
Because
yeah.
He says, I caught hold of them both and said, "We can't help ourselves, but we can be quiet and composed. Pray, don't cry out." So he's telling them to calm down.
Yeah.
So that was the only one where you really had to infer. The rest were directly there.
Pray, don't cry out.
Okay, so... If we have a look at the rest of the questions before we carry on reading, question 2 is our summary question. Do you guys do SQI for that?
We do. Yes.
So that's a statement, quote, and inference.
Yeah.
And do you, how I've been saying is you either have a statement which is talking about a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and then you have your quotes and your inferences, or you do a statement about one, quote, inference, and then how it's different, the how the other one is different, mm-hmm. so your squid.
Yeah? I try to get just SQ about both into one sentence.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it's just one said, one, the only one carriage did not go over, whereas in the other one, blah, blah, blah. And
yeah.
I just embed the author's words and make it my own.
I like having the very first statement being a statement of connection.
Yeah,
because
so do
then
I.
You're
You've
showing
definitely
the,
got it in there.
Exactly. You're showing the examiner I can make links. So I'm worried that they might miss it otherwise. But
yeah.
Again, they shouldn't if they're actually reading your answer. But
yeah, I think also be clear because we don't actually know if it's going to be a summary of differences. It might be like...
A summary
of the writer's viewpoints, in which case you want similarities and differences. So just go through with your highlighter and just make sure that you're clear that this in this instance we're looking at differences between source A and source B.
So we're doing technical things.
So we're looking for the differences and we need to look at both sources. Question three, how does Charles Dickens use language to convey his thoughts and feelings about the disaster? And then question four, which is your 16 marker, is refer to source A and source B. Source A. Compare how the writers present their different perspectives of the national railway disasters they describe. So in this case, it's quite similar. Sometimes these can be quite sneaky because two and four make sure that you're aware that they of what they're talking about. Okay, so... in one practice we've done, you have to look at healthcare, and in for question two and for question four, you have to look at the idea of illness. So make sure that you've identified what the focus is for the question.
Yeah, because you can use the same quotes if relevant, and you have to be careful not to just assume that they will be relevant.
Yeah, don't just rush in and basically write question two again for question four, but with some language analysis, because it's not always going to be like that. Okay, so should we have a read through of the sources then?
Yes.
What I have said to my students, and so I say to you at home listening now, is when you read the sources, figure out what you're looking for question two. So it's a viewpoint on the rail disasters. And then when you get to the bottom of the source, if you just bullet point a couple of ideas of like what you think that viewpoint is it was it that the disaster, I mean, I've not read it, so was it that the disaster was frightening or unavoidable or traumatic, or whatever it is, just write down a couple of words once you're finished reading so it's fresh, and you can use those later on for your question twos or your question fours.
Good advice, miss.
Thank you very much. Right, so... rail disasters, viewpoints, from the top. Who wants to do the reading? I don't think Mrs. Shirley should read.
No, I want to read it.
Do you not need to go home?
No, not yet.
You do?
No, like...
Let him do the first one, and I'll do the second one.
Wait, source B?
Yeah,
okay.
Source A.
Source A. We're already... Okay, so fortunately...
No, you need to... No, you missed the beginning.
Go back to the beginning.
Are you joking?
Oh,
of course.
My God.
You've not even read out the most important bit, which is that bit in bold at the top.
The Victorian era saw a horrific number of fatal train crashes. The writer Charles Dickens was involved in a train crash in Staplehurst on the 9th of June, 1865, but fortunately survived. Here is his eyewitness account in a letter written to a friend.
Right, miss, why is it so important to read that bit? I know obviously stupid Mr. Shirley didn't, but why do we not want to be like him?
When you are making links to... you know, writers' perspectives, writers' viewpoints, etc. You need to know whether they've seen it themselves, whether they've heard about it, etc. Because that will have an impact on your analysis.
Good point.
It's also really interesting to you need to go into here with some idea of the purpose, audience, and format. Mm-hmm. And you get that from that first bit. You also know to expect, you know, when you learn then about the Victorian era, it just gives you a little bit more information and stuff that you can cling on to. But again, it's a first person, an eyewitness account. It's a letter that's been written to a friend. Okay, so it's important you get that information about the purpose, audience, and format.
Well, especially because if it's a friend, you might be more likely to be open than if, you know, you're writing to a parent and you want to hide how terrible things were.
Yeah, exactly. Or perhaps he could be writing a complaint letter to the railway service where he might over-exaggerate. You know, all of those things are really important. Really important that you notice and recognise when you're reading through it. So it's good to have your eyes peeled before you start, which is why Mr. Shirley is wrong. And once again, Miss Meeks is right.
Can I keep reading?
From the top, please.
My dear Mitten, I should have written to you yesterday or the day before, if I had been quite up to writing. I am a little shaken, not by the beating and dragging of the carriage in which I was, but by the hard work afterwards in getting out the dying and dead, which was most horrible. Read the same one again?
Yes, why not? Because we're now looking for attitudes towards railways.
I was in the only carriage that did not go over into the stream. It was caught upon the turn by some of the ruin of the bridge, and hung suspended and balanced in an apparently impossible manner. Two ladies were my fellow passengers, an old one and a young one. This is exactly what passed. You may judge from it the precise length of this suspense. Suddenly, we were off the rail and beating the ground as a car of a half-emptied balloon might. The old lady cried out, "My God!" and the young one screamed. I got hold of them both. The old lady sat opposite, and the young one...
Why are you whispering?
Ed said, "We can't help ourselves, but we can be quiet and composed. Pray, don't cry out." They both answered quite collectively, "Yes." And I got out without the least notion of what had happened. Fortunately, I got out with great caution and stood upon the step. Looking down, I saw the bridge gone, nothing below me but the line of the rail. Some people in the two other compartments were madly trying to plunge out of the window, and I had no idea there was an open swamp 15 feet below them and nothing else. The two guards, one with his face cut, were running up and down on the downside of the bridge, which was not torn up quite wildly. I called out to them, "Look at me! Do stop an instant and look at me, and tell me whether you don't know me." One of them answered, "We know you very well, Mr. Dickens." "Then," I said, "my good fellow, for God's sake, give me your key, and send out one of those laborers here, and I'll empty this carriage." We did it quite safely, by means of a plank or two, and when it was done, I guess I'm laughing, I don't know.
We've got rid of Mr. Shirley because he got the giggles, so I'm going to resume reading from the third paragraph. "We did it quite safely, by means of a plank or two, and when it was done, I saw all the rest of the train, except the two baggage cars, down in the stream. I got into the carriage again for my brandy flask, took off my travelling hat for a basin, climbed down the brickwork and filled my hat with water. Suddenly I came upon a staggering man covered with blood. I think he must have been flung clean out of his carriage, with such a frightful cut across his skull that I couldn't bear to look at him. I poured some water over his face and gave him some to drink and gave him some brandy and laid him down on the grass, and he said, 'I am gone,' and died afterwards. Then I stumbled over a lady lying on her back against the little pollard tree, with the blood streaming over her face, which was lead-coloured, in a number of distinct little streams from the head. I asked her if she could swallow a little brandy, and she just nodded. I gave her some and left her for somebody else. The next time I passed her, she was dead. No imagination can conceive the ruin of the carriages, or the extraordinary weights under which the people were lying, or the complications into which they were twisted up among iron and wood and mud and water. I don't want to be examined at the inquests, and I don't want to write about it. It could do no good either way, and I could only seem to speak about myself, which, of course, I would rather not do. But in writing these scanty words of recollection, I feel the shake and I am obliged to stop. Ever faithfully, Charles Dickens." Let me just go through. I've got a couple more things to highlight towards the end. So, Miss, do you just want to say what bullet points you might put at the bottom?
Yeah, so in terms of, I would go, before I wrote anything, just check the question one more time. And in this case, writers' viewpoints of the rail disasters they each describe. There's a lot where he talks about kind of the blood and the horror. So I would say one bullet point I would make is that it's quite horrifying.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So there's lots of evidence you could use to show how it's affected him.
Yep.
So I'll just bullet point horrifying.
Yeah, you have the long-lasting impact, like you just said, especially at the end when he says, I can't talk about it, it's hard to write about it. But also, there was parts of it where he almost seemed, like, calm. I haven't read the other one yet.
No, me neither.
But it seems like he is calm in the face of, you know, quite a horrific disaster. So actually part of his viewpoint, especially when he's calming the women in the carriage, might link to that idea.
Yeah.
About it being collected.
That you need to like stay focused and stay strong.
Yeah.
Because he certainly at the start is the sort of person who's saying, you know, taking charge of the situation.
Yeah, almost coming off as like quite courageous.
Definitely. The other thing I would say could be like just quite how dangerous these accidents are, because we have a number of instances where we learn about people that are dead. We've got skulls and this, that and the other. So I would just talk about the danger of it.
And the nice thing is, I mean, you're only doing an 8-mark question. So when you're actually writing these up, that is enough.
Oh, for
sure.
You're
not going to be able to prove every single thing.
No, having those three things and finding some quotes for them, when we read through Source B now, we'll see, you know, what's similar and what's different. And even if we can't find those three as differences, we'll definitely be able to use them for question 4.
Yeah, and in terms of differences, they might be dangerous, both dangerous, but in different ways.
Yeah.
So I think that's important as well, that you can actually do.
That was one of the things with the for your TAPS, actually. It talked about the extreme weather conditions, and they were both quite extreme, but one of them was extreme, but there was also this element of beauty. And so it doesn't have to be, oh, but what, in both of them people died. Yes, that's fine, but they also might be, you know, just viewed in a very different way.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Source B then, Miss.
All right. Source B. So this is a newspaper interview with the parents of a woman who was killed in a train crash 15 years earlier, known as the Paddington Rail Disaster, which occurred in London on the 5th of October 1999.
Just before we start, should we just talk about this, of some of the significance here?
Absolutely.
So newspaper interview. So again, we've got our format there, but I think what's really significant is we've got parents of someone that was killed.
Yep.
So we've immediately got the emotion in there that we're going to expect and look for. You know, so whereas a newspaper interview might, you might sometimes think that that would be maybe less revealing and less emotive than a letter, but I think in this instance, it's probably going to be just as much.
Yeah. And I think, too, even just the fact it's known as a rail disaster, you kind of get that idea that maybe it's not as common. Obviously, rail disasters, you know, at this point in time, so.
Yeah. Well, and we know as well that it's much later.
Yeah. All right. Those present at the scene of the Paddington rail crash have said that the worst memory they have endured over the past 15 years is the sound of mobile phones ringing from the bodies of the dead. Among the scorched metal carcasses of the two trains involved in one of Britain's worst ever rail disasters, a cacophony of telephones bleeped and buzzed. At the other end of the line were anxious family and friends, their desperation building with each missed call. Denman Groves first phoned his daughter Juliet at 8:30 a.m. on October 5th, 1999. He and his wife Maureen had woken up in their home in the village of
Ashleworth,
near Gloucester, and as usual switched on the television news. Like the rest of the nation watching that crisp autumn morning, they stared in shock at the plume of smoke rising from the wreckage of the two passenger trains that had collided just outside Paddington Station. Neither could even imagine that the 25-year-old daughter might have been on board. "I didn't even think she was anywhere near Paddington that day," says Denman. "Still, when he left for work, he tried to phone her from the car, just to make sure. There was no answer. I thought I'd try again, but then I was so busy that I forgot. It wasn't until lunchtime that I called. I still couldn't get an answer, so phoned her company. They said, "We're afraid she hasn't arrived yet, Mr. Groves, and we're very worried." At that point, my heart sank. Gosh, it's really sad. Juliet Groves, an accountant with Ernst & Young, was one of the hundreds aboard a Thames Trains commuter service from Paddington Station at 8:06 that morning. Petite, pretty, and fiercely intelligent, the previous year she had come seventh in the entire country in her chartered accountancy exams. Juliet lived in Chiswick, but was traveling by train to Slough, where she was winding up a company. Despite her young age, she was already a specialist in bankruptcy and was being fast-tracked to become partner in the company. From birth, she had suffered from partial blindness and was unable to drive. As a result, she traveled everywhere by rail. She was in the front carriage of the train when it passed through a red signal at Ladbroke Grove and into the path of the oncoming Paddington-bound First Great Western Express, traveling from Cheltenham Spa in Gloucestershire. I can't say these British names.
Gloucestershire.
Okay. Both drivers were killed, as well as 29 passengers, and 400 others were injured. Juliet's body was one of the last to be discovered. She was finally found on the eighth day. The outcry that followed led to the biggest ever safety shakeup of the country's rail network. In 2007, after years of campaigning by the families, Network Rail was fined $4 million for health and safety breaches. Traveling by train on the same line from Paddington towards
Gloucester,
it is
Gloucestershire.
Easy to imagine the scene in those carriages seconds before the impact. Passengers gaze out of windows across the snaking railway, lines bordered by city shrub. A few talk business into mobile phones, others sip coffees and browse through the newspapers. The disaster, says Network Rail, simply could not happen today. But that promise is not enough for Deadman and Maureen Groves. Neither have boarded a British train since the crash and never will again. Their grief would not allow it, nor the sense of lingering injustice. "I can't do it. I won't do it," says Deadman. "I don't want any involvement with Network Rail. The last contact I had with them was at the trial in 2007. I told the chairman he ought to be ashamed of himself."
Okay. So if we just go back to the idea of it's the viewpoint of the rail disasters, this one is slightly different.
Yeah.
There's a lot more blame.
I was about to say that was the key word that stuck out with me was blame.
Yeah, and this idea of sort of cause and their I think blame is a big thing that comes through when reading this. The fact that it was someone's responsibility.
Well, especially they mentioned like went through a red light. You know, it was something preventable as well.
And yeah, we've got words. You know, lingering injustice, trial. You know. What else do we think? What else is different?
Well, in terms of talking about the disaster itself, I don't think it's as graphic.
No.
So in terms of when you're talking about kind of the differences in the viewpoint,
it's quite detached.
It is. It's more about like the number of people who died.
I was just thinking that, you know, the statistics. Yeah. It's which you kind of would expect from a newspaper, more informative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, we're just both scribbling these at the bottom.
I mean, you do get, at the beginning, more of that kind of graphic.
Well, it's like that introduction, isn't it? That sort of,
The imagery of bleeping phone calls, you know, that missed calls, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But again, that's not really necessarily about the disaster itself in terms of answering this question.
Yeah, I guess it's again, how, like, that it's also horrifying.
Yeah, if you're going to do writer's viewpoint, you're making it.
What else would we do we think?
I guess in terms of the viewpoints, it's more personal in terms of that kind of, it's not really, it's kind of like an anecdote when you go into that story of one person's loss, and you get that kind of idea.
I guess
about
the letter's personal though as well. I think this seems like, it seems less horrific, but I think it seems to have had more impact.
Well, I think because you get the detail of, like, she was pretty and intelligent and she was, you know, a good person. So you get, because you hear her story and you know that there are so many others who have died.
Yeah.
You kind of say, well, what are their stories?
Yes, but also I think the fact that, yes. Where were we?
I don't know. Sorry, I just got interrupted.
Yeah, I think the fact that it's led to the biggest ever shake-up, what can we say about that? Like,
I guess it's the idea that it had such an impact. If you're talking about the viewpoint on the disaster, you're kind of seeing not really the fallout, but almost the good.
Yeah.
Like, because of this,
so
we're able to make...
it caused a change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So if you were going to write this up, you'd be looking at now, actually, you've had some bullet points, which quotes are best going to help get those ideas across, and which links make the most sense as well. So if you're going to be talking about, you know, how one had a lasting impact, actually both of them had a lasting impact because these people said never to go to train again.
Yeah.
But you have to look at differences.
Yeah.
So it's about...
So whereas this one only really seems to have this, for source A, it's only really a lasting impact for him, whereas for source B, that caused a chain of events that meant that now there was like a, whatever the quotes were, for 4 million for health and safety breaches, simply could not happen today, biggest ever shake-up. It shows that this has had, this hasn't just affected one individual or one family, it's actually had repercussions. So I would go with those sorts of quotes, I think. What about for source A then, to show that the impact, show how it was a more personal impact?
Well, perhaps the end of source A.
Yeah, I feel the shake.
Yeah.
He says it at the start as well. I am a little shaken.
Yeah, and the fact he doesn't want to talk about it, I don't want to be examined. So where the others had to go to that trial,
yeah,
you know, him, I don't want to be examined, I don't want to write about it.
Yeah.
So that sort of idea.
So another thing, one of the things that we had for source A was about how this guy sort of stays focused and keeps his calm during the disaster. We don't really see any of that because we don't have it from the perspective of someone alive in the disaster. So it's from us, it's from the viewpoint of the father, who also keeps his calm, but then is almost like then ignorant to what's going on. So you could say that it's from the perspective of someone who's not there.
Which does help in terms of linking it to viewpoint. So because he's not there,
yeah,
he's able, and that's the important thing. Like when you are doing your analysis, reading those bits at the beginning are so important when you're making links as to, you know, why things have impact or why they're important.
Horrifying. It's horrifying for both.
But I would say in source B, it's because of the sheer volume. So you have like the statistics: 29 passengers, 400 injured.
Yeah,
and that makes it quite scary.
Yeah.
Whereas in the other one, it's more about the graphic nature of it.
Yeah, we've got
staggering men.
Flung, man covered in blood. He had a cut across his skull, so the fact that they're using skull.
And frightful cut, yeah. Too.
And
you get direct quotes from people who've died as well, like the "I am gone" and died afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that he stumbled over, all of these things you can kind of... Well, actually, you could probably use them... we can go into more detail when we look at question three. But yeah, it's certainly horrifying from a... It's described in... Well, it's descriptive. Whereas with source B, it's not as... it's more...
Informative. Yeah.
Which you would expect. And the other thing that was missing that's in source B and not in source A, source A has very little blame, has very little cause. Does it actually say how it happened?
It just talks about going into the stream or going over the stream. So the idea that...
I guess also...
It got derailed. It's something about being derailed.
Yeah, and it was balanced in an impossible manner, which kind of suggested a lack of blame.
Yeah, and suddenly we were off the rail. So it's not, you know...
Not someone's run a red light, which is what we have in the second source. So I think that's probably your biggest point of difference. Yeah. Because we've got quite a lot of blame going on in source B. For the whoever's caused this railway accident. Okay.
All right.
Question three then. Refer to source A. How does Charles Dickens use language to convey his thoughts and feelings about the disaster? Well,
so easy.
Such a good question.
Yeah.
You guys should be absolute pros for this.
Yeah. I would say the biggest thing...
I highlighted so much.
Yeah, I would say if you're going to get those top marks, you have so many quotes to choose from. So choose the quotes that have multiple techniques.
Yeah.
So, you know, dying and dead. So you have your alliteration, but then actually you can zoom in on the connotations of those words and the idea that actually...
Well, it's foreshadowing, yeah. It's, he's talking about... I can't... Oh, get it. No, it's not. Never mind. I was reading the wrong bit.
It's right at the beginning.
Oh,
so
yeah.
In getting out the dying and dead, but it is the idea of dying and dead. It's reminding you that some of those who are not yet dead are about to become...
Well, yeah, they're hopeless.
You know?
It's... Yeah, it's... We're basically just going to be left with a bunch of corpses.
Yeah.
We've got... So, what is it? Is it to describe the accident?
It's feelings about the disaster.
Okay.
So, I would link that to, of course, his personal feelings, because he says, because of that, it was most horrible. So,
yeah.
It's linked directly to the impact on him, which would be feelings.
Yeah. So, how does he feel, then, and how does he show it? Well, we've got... We sort of said at the bottom how horrific this is, and there's so many different really, like, nice, juicy quotes that you could use there. Staggering man covered with blood.
Madly trying to plunge out the window.
Yeah. Like, these we can look at, you know, the verbs of staggering and plunge.
Adverbs with madly.
Yeah.
So, again, and he's doing it so often, it is clearly for effect.
Yeah.
And to emphasize how horrible and frightening it was. Like, really, he was scared, although he tries to stay calm.
Well, he, you know, he, I was just going to say creates the effect for us, but that's basically what you're not allowed to say. But we can imagine the horror, and I think we can visualize, you know, this scene as if it was something that we've watched on TV. Mm. Because of how well it's been described. So the imagery that he uses constantly does help us understand the environment. And I guess there's lots of sensory language. We've got women screaming, beating the ground. You know, all of this stuff is kind of showing everything that's happening all around him.
And I think it's important, you know, to talk about the effect on the reader, because in this case, you know who the reader is. It's not you. It's his friend.
Yeah.
And so I think if you do know who the reader is supposed to be, you can talk about why it would have such an impact on his friend. And I think that's something more sophisticated than just talking about the reader.
I was
going to
say, a lot
general.
Of people will miss that.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that, you know, that it's obviously a close friend as well. So my dear Mitten.
Yeah.
You know, this is someone that's close to him who's going to be equally horrified, who's going to be concerned about him, especially the stuff where he talks about, essentially he's got sort of post-traumatic stress disorder here.
Yep.
And he, I feel the shake and I'm obliged to stop. That last sort of poignant ending to his letter.
Quite sympathetic, aren't you?
Yeah, you as a reader would, well, you as Mitten,
yep,
reading this, are going to feel really worried about your friend.
And I think you have to remember this was not written, you know, for a high school exam, you know, hundreds
yeah,
of years
this
later.
Is some, yeah, this is an actual text that, you know, has been found. And this isn't fiction.
Yeah.
This is non-fiction.
I think that's the biggest mistake that people make with this paper is that, you know, the effect on the reader, you know, to build suspense and do this and that. But actually, if it's non-fiction, yes, that might be part of it, but you have to link to the actual
Yeah, I don't
audience.
Think Charles Dickens, which is weird saying this, obviously Charles Dickens is a famous writer, but I don't think in this instance he is trying to entertain, engage. He's hot, he's trying to cope, and I think he's trying to express to his friend the horror of what he's just been through. So, you know how we, you know, sort of drummed out for your literature, don't talk about Macbeth as if he's a person, he's Shakespeare's construct. Well, no, actually, this is the person. These were his thoughts, these were his feelings, and these are how he's expressing them. So that's where you get a real difference from literature. Okay, should we just move on to question 4?
Yeah.
Obviously, you'd need to, like, say 2 or 3 things that you could really go into detail with there.
Yeah, and I was telling my students, you know, 12 marks, like 2 to 3 paragraphs, will be enough to show a strong understanding of language.
100%.
And I think too many people because this is probably easier for them, they want to go and talk about this technique and that technique, but actually link a couple of them together, talk about the combined effect.
Yeah.
You know, these three adjectives all help.
Yeah, you don't need to say a point, have your evidence and explain it, another point, and because actually you'd end up repeating yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
This also shows the horror. This also shows the horror. Just talk about how horrific it is and look at all this different evidence that's building the worry in this reader who's received this letter. Okay, so question four. First source A and source B, compare the percent their different perspectives of the national railway disasters they describe. Compare their different perspectives. You should compare the methods they use to convey their attitudes and support your ideas with quotations from both texts. This one is really similar to question two and what we've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect it to be this similar.
No.
What I would suggest when you're doing your write-up, because I do want you to try and write these up, is I want you to make sure then that even if you have got quite a lot of overlap with question two, because obviously these aren't official AQA papers. These have just been made by some poor sod who's uploaded them for me to download. But you want to make sure that you're clear. So it's sort of ignoring everything you know about question two. You've got perspectives of the national railway disasters, and you want to talk about similarities and differences here.
Mm.
So it isn't just focused on the differences in their viewpoints.
Yeah, and in all the model answers that I've seen on the AQA websites, etc., their first line is establishing why they have that perspective. So, you know, source B is from the parent's point of view.
Yeah.
Therefore, they are frustrated, and you see that in this way.
Yeah.
You cannot ignore who is doing the writing, or you will flunk that last question.
100%. You need to acknowledge purpose, audience, and format definitely in this question four. It's worth 16 marks. So if you're just writing what you've written for question two, you're not going to get them.
No.
You need to, yes, you build through question two and question three to get to question four. And absolutely, you can use some of those skills that you've used to write those answers, and some of the information even might overlap. But you've got to have something else. You've got to think about why their attitudes are different.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important. So using, and even using the fact that they're from different time periods. So a train disaster in source A seems quite by the by. It seems quite regular. It's not too shocking. Whereas in source B, it's referred to as you said earlier, miss.
Sorry, miss.
One second. Sorry, just got interrupted again. I think we were talking about how, what was it referred to? Paddington rail disaster.
You were just talking about how common it is compared to...
Yeah, so in source A it was, you know, like not quite this big tragedy. It was something that happened quite regularly. As you'd expect, you know, technology is nowhere near as advanced as it is in 1999, where, you know, we've got this real shock, and then also the lasting impact of all of the changes that were made. And I think the line simply could not happen today is quite significant, because readers reading this newspaper extract would never imagine that they themselves would be in this crisis. Mm.
I think, too, you have to remember for this question, when it says how they convey their attitudes, it is allowing you to talk about structure as well. So if you're going to say something like, you know, this occurs in chronological order, and we are able to see each person that Dickens encounters, and because of that, it has this effect, you know, that can get you marks. It's not just language.
Well, yeah, and also for source B, we've got the interview, but it's not just written by, it's not written by the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've conducted an interview, and they've included dialogue from that. They've included direct quotations from these parents to, you know, create this sense of empathy. We've also got some, they've included information about the one of the victims, where she talks about how she was partially blind, and we're creating this whole sort of personal attachment to a victim compared to perhaps in source B where they're just kind of skulls.
Yeah, person after person after person. Yeah. It's almost like listing the different people that he encounters.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's interesting that you said that because it really reminds me of question five. Like the techniques that you use, your forest pit techniques, you are looking for those things.
Yeah.
You
know, I was saying that to them on Monday.
Facts and statistics.
Everything that you want to include yourself. If you go through these two sources and, you know, we've kind of rushed through this and we're obviously not sitting the exam, but also quite confident and comfortable with identifying certain things. But if you want to go through and label when you see a list, or just so you've got that to remind you to write about it, or if you see a rule of three, I think I saw somewhere, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. statistics, blah, blah, blah. If you just want to make notes of them on your paper and make sure that you include those in your questions four, they're just going to, and then they're there as a list for you to go through and check off for your question five. Have I used as many as I saw in the source? You know, if you're sitting there in your section B thinking, I don't know what to write, I can't remember any techniques, and then you just read through these sources and you think, oh God, there was a really good rhetorical question there. I need to include a rhetorical question. It will help you, hopefully.
Yeah.
So.
Was there a question five?
No. There is a question five. Just going to have a look at it now.
Oh. The government should invest more money in public transport, as there are so many good reasons to use it. Write a letter to the editor of your local newspaper explaining your views on this statement.
Okay. Firstly, can I just talk about how lucky you would be if you had something that is in the same format really as one of the sources, because you've got letter, which you've seen in source A, but also you've got the outcome that you've seen in source B, where obviously you've had these parents campaigning, going to trial, and managing to get, you know, however many million invested in public transport. So you can see there some of the things that the newspaper have done, like including mm-hmm. an anecdote, making it personal, using emotive language. And you can then, obviously don't copy out straight from the text, but you can use that as inspiration for what you would write about.
I think the nice thing to do is when you get a statement like this, if you take 2 minutes and bullet point reasons you agree and reasons you disagree, it's very easy to see which side you should take, and then the arguments for the other side are the ones that you're going to use as your counter-arguments.
Yes.
You know, some people might say that, but actually,
however, blah, blah, blah. And by using those things, demonstrating that you've actually been taught that structure in lessons, because believe it or not, you have been, then you're going to get much higher marks because you're going to have shown that you have the right content and organisation. Okay, you understand purpose, audience, format. You understand how you lay this out. Okay, you acknowledge that there's another point of view and that money might want to go somewhere else. Or if you're arguing, actually, public transport isn't as important as NHS or education. You know, you can explain your views, and just because it says explaining your views, you still want to try and be persuasive, because you that's like the best way to sort of get your marks, really, as long as you're not being too
pushy.
Okay, done. Okay,
if you work on it tonight, you bring it in, we'll look at it for you.
Yeah, we absolutely will. So I'm going to email out, as soon as I get off this, I will email out this resource, but I also have about 60 of them printed in English 5 for you to collect whenever you want. Thank you and good night.
Bye. Thank you.